Hey, KU fans, welcome back to another episode of the KU Sports Hour here at KUSports.com. I'm Matt Tate, and I'm with my guys, Shane Smith and Benton Jackson.
I think you might have botched that. Let me look at my driver's license just to verify.
Did I? Okay. Yeah. Well, still, that game last night just took it out of me. I'm still out of sorts. I mean, just a game in the 50s, a slugfest. I mean, obviously, it forced me to mix up your last names. I just don't have it today. But luckily, I don't have to have it. So that is Shane Jackson, and that is Benton Smith on their IDs, government-issued IDs. It's official.
We were geeking out. Me and Shane were geeking out on Twitter about how much we love college basketball.
You were?
Yeah. Best sport ever.
I think it was about 22 to 21 late in the first half when we were kind of having some fun with that.
But just blown it away.
A lot more entertaining.
You know, yeah, right, for a game games, in the 50s?
Tight games down the stretch at least give you that. Down the those final minutes become a lot more entertaining and watchable.
Absolutely. For a game in the 50s, it was way better. And from a competitive, from a enjoyment standpoint than most games in the 50s. I mean, it wasn't like we were watching who would be a good Minnesota, although they're pretty good lately, aren't they? Who's the worst Big Ten matchup you can think of? They're all good right now. Nebraska against
shots.
I was thinking K-State versus, like, anybody.
That's true.
Oh, they can get some ugly basketball games going.
That is true. It was ugly, but obviously if you're a Kansas Jayhawk or a Kansas fan, it was probably pretty at the end. So we'll break that down a little bit. We're going to talk some Big 12 race. It is far from a race right now, but it's going to be a race all year, both to get to the finish line as the champion, but also to get through it with COVID still lingering. So that's interesting. And then we'll let Benton do a 5-minute recap of KU's early signing period. I know he's really excited to do that. Spoiler though, Benton, I don't want to give away, you know, your whole take and like everything you've prepared for this segment, but I'm going to give these guys a spoiler alert.
Okay.
KU likes their class.
I know. We were just talking about that before we started recording.
Can you believe it?
Never happens.
No, it never happens. They're always like, "Ah, these guys suck." But these guys, according to Les Miles, these guys, this class has a chance to be special.
Pretty special.
Yeah. We'll see what happens, man. But we'll get into that toward the end. Let's jump into the KU-Texas Tech game a little bit more. Obviously, the big story there, Ochai Agbaji, not only the game winner, but just how well he played. Did he surprise either one of you? I mean, he's had a great start, so you kind of expect him to play well pretty much any game right now. But what he did against Tech, did that surprise either one of you?
I don't think I wasn't surprised. Obviously, he was, you know, even more efficient and effective than probably he's been at any point this season. And he only really had that one bad game, right?
Right.
Creighton, where he was 0-for-6 or whatever it was. But, I mean, the guy is just – I think we've talked about this. He's just way more confident in everything. He looks – and how many times has Self said he looks like a pro when he rises up to shoot, right? Because,
incredible.
I mean, he's – he's like the best athlete on the team, and now he's got that 3-point shot. That stroke is looking, you know, smooth. So, I mean, that's such a great weapon for them to have out on the perimeter. I don't know that any of us expected him to be the leading scorer for this team, but I mean, it's kind of looking like he's going to be that guy for them this year.
I do want to say in our preseason KU basketball preview podcast, when we picked leading scorers, I said Garrett. I think – I don't know what you guys said. One of you said –
Garrett. We swept Garrett.
We agreed.
Yeah, we
agreed.
Yeah. Okay, so, So then we went to round two. We went to our 1A, and I did say Ochai, but only largely because none of us had said him. I was last, and we were five guys deep or five guesses deep anyway. And I'm not trying to take credit. I know it sounds like that, and that sucks for me because I sound like a real loser right now. But – I think that was kind of the point I was trying to make was that, I mean, nobody expected that really. I mean, it took us six guesses to even mention his name. And I think we probably all would have said he's going to be top three on the team in scoring. Like he's just been that guy, but he does seem to have taken it to another level. Like you said, Benton, from the confidence standpoint for sure, but also just he's aggressive. I think he's that status as this is my team a little bit, you know, that's really helping him assert himself and look to score more and look to do more You mentioned the line that Self said about, I mean, he said it before, but he said it again last night about him jumping up and looking like a pro when he shot the ball. I don't think we've ever talked about this. I'm sure it's been talked about plenty, but I don't think we've ever talked about it. But have you ever noticed the similarities in physical appearance between Ochai and Giannis? Have you ever noticed it?
I haven't.
Okay. Okay. So
one's like 7'1".
No.
6'5".
We're talking right here. We're talking just the face.
Facial features.
I'm gonna learn how to throw up some graphics and photos here sometime soon on these podcasts, especially now that we're doing Zoom. So bear with me. We don't have it here. But anybody listening, Benton, that includes you. Go look. Put them side by side. Do a comparison. And the reason I say that is because once upon a time, I think it was after the Milwaukee game last year, I was talking to Ochai's dad after the game, and he showed me a picture of – I don't even remember at this point if it was Ochai or if it was Giannis. I think he showed me a picture of Ochai, and I was like, oh, you guys went and watched him play? And he's like, that's Ochai. I think he calls him O. But I was blown away how much he looked like him. And then, you know, he's – obviously developing his upper body anyway. He's not going to be 7'1", but he's cut up right now, and he looks, you know, just look at it. That's all I'm asking. Just look at it. Shane, anything? Have you looked at it?
So do you think if KU decided to switch jerseys and players out that nobody would notice? Is that what you're telling me?
It works.
I think I'm going to change my prediction to KU winning the Big 12 that if they can do that.
It works, yeah. It's not quite as good as the Morris twins threatening to wear each other's jersey in the NBA playoffs when one of them was hurt a couple years ago, but it's close. So I think as long as it's number 30 and as long as he just bombs from the outside, I mean, if Ochai – the new Ochai started posting people up, they'd probably know. They'd be like, oh, that's Giannis, damn it. But if he just –
oh, he only dribbled once from half court and dunked. It doesn't seem like Ochai.
On five guys. So, anyway, Shane, any thoughts? I mean, we talked a little about it. Benton obviously wasn't surprised. I don't think I was totally surprised. How about you?
Yeah, I don't think so after his last game, the one following the Creighton game, when he responded by having a good game against Omaha. And I thought that was the big deal for him because, you know, in the past you had seen, you know, maybe if he had a bad game, but he'd have a couple bad games in a row. And then he'd have one good game, everybody'd be like, hey, is this him turning the corner? And then he'd respond by, you know, a couple bad games in a row as well, or inconsistency, I guess, in a row. And so I think the big thing for him was that he was able to immediately bounce back and put that game behind him. And that probably speaks to what Benton was talking about with his confidence. And it probably wouldn't surprise any of us now, like if we decided, hey, Ochai is going to be the leading scorer for KU. Like I bet he would be our first guess moving forward now.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I think it'll be a hell of a battle between him and Jalen Wilson. I really do. I mean, that's kind of the one thing, you know, we do the KU sports ratings after the games now. And that's kind of the thing that most games, it's pretty obvious who stood out and who's going to be number one. You know, it's very rare that it's that crowded at the top. Like, you know, so I get it if people don't want to click on that and find out that Ochai was the best player last night. But the reason to click on it, I think, is for the season standings. You go look at the bottom and you just kind of – it gives you an idea of where guys are in terms of being consistent and consistent contributors 1 through 12, really. So those guys, I think, are separated by 2 points through 8 games now, and that's going to be fun to watch. And David McCormick, whether he goes up or down, I think he's right in the middle now, maybe fifth or sixth. That's going to be fun to watch. There's a lot you can get out of those that aren't the obvious. So anybody listening that thinks we're stupid for doing them, just remember that that's why we do them, because we're tracking the whole season, not just each game. So
also on a game by game basis, the more interesting part is like who's in that bottom half that shouldn't be. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
that's what you need to click on it for. I'm sure a lot of fans could, you know, pick Ochai or Jalen depending on the night as the top guy, but beyond that, that's the tricky part. That's the tough part. That's why they pay you the big bucks to make those tough choices.
You said it well. So, yeah, and they're fun to do. I mean, they take no time. You know, you do them as the game's going and whatnot. So when they are tough, though, they're fun. You know, when you do have five or six guys that all played about the same and you have to decide, that's fun. So KU's going to have plenty of those games with their balance and their depth, but I think it's really interesting that this rotation has you know, it's very clear that, that they're pretty comfortable with their first six, right? Self said that last earlier this week. I mean, he said our five starters are who they are, and then Bryce is going to be the first guard off the bench. I think you could probably throw Lightfoot in there as obviously the first big off the bench. There aren't any others over there. So I think he's going to continue to give Lightfoot those opportunities. He put him in there real early last night, and McCormick didn't have a great game by any means, but the more you see it offensively and defensively, I think you're starting to see Self really just explain by action what the value of having that big on the floor is to this team. And he's talked about it, and it goes way beyond somebody who can score. I mean, like the perfect example of what I'm trying to say here from last night was, and Jay Billis was talking about it left and right, but the DeJuan Harris three-pointer, right? The only reason he got that look was because Texas Tech was small, and David McCormick was in the paint, and they had to put two or three guys down there to at least be around him, to bother him so that he didn't just get easy runs to the rim, dunks, layups, that kind of thing. And by having him in there to suck that defense off the perimeter, it opened up that shot for DeJuan Harris, who's not a shooter. He's not looking to shoot, but he stepped into that one and made it. And I think Self called it the second biggest shot of the game. Did he say that afterwards?
It was the biggest play of the game up until Ochai's game winner, I think, was how he rephrased that, right?
Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, right. And it was with, like, 4 minutes left or something, I think. Yeah. So, but anyway, that's something that's jumped out at me, because it's real easy to look at the production and the numbers and the 3 of 10 shooting and only 3 rebounds. And, you know, people I know, fans on Twitter, are saying, what the hell is he still doing out there? Why is McCormick playing? Blah, 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 blah. But I think it's important to remember that those types of things are, at this point, as much of a reason as anything. And whether that works out or whether it's the right way to go or not remains to be seen. But I'm going to trust Self. I think he proved that again last night. And I think that, you know, he'll go away from him if that's the right move too.
Yeah, it's also surprising to me that, like, a defense would be sucked in to worry about McCormick, right?
Very
because,
good point.
I mean, he hasn't been that productive inside, and a lot of times you would almost prefer him getting the ball in the post and, like, shooting over a double team or whatever decision he might end up making, because that's better for you as a defense if you have McCormick taking a low percentage shot. But yeah, and I don't know, I feel like teams are playing off of Harris too, right? Like, they're not going the severe, like, Marcus Garrett strategy where they're just, like, inviting him to shoot. But I mean, it's at times we've seen teams kind of do that with Harris just because,
sure,
he's not a proven 3-point shooter yet.
Yeah, I think he's an interesting case. I mean, that's what we were kind of getting into with the rotation, right? So, mm-hmm. So you know what you're going to get from the 5 starters or what they're going to be asked to do anyway. You know what you're going to get from Bryce. You know what Mitch Lightfoot's role is, but the rest. So you got Tyon Grant Foster, you got Tristan Inaruna, you got DeJuan Harris. Is that it? I mean, other than Josel and Muscadin, did I name everybody?
Yeah, that's everybody.
So mainly it's those three, right? It's Grant Foster, it's Harris, and it's Inaruna, and how they fit into the rotation, or if they fit into the rotation. And I think that's still a work in progress. I think that's something they probably would have been way closer to figuring out in a normal season when they had 12 non-conference games. But since they only had 6 or 7 – I guess it would be 7 exactly. There is no 6 or 7. Since they only had 7, that's 5 fewer opportunities for those guys to get comfortable, for those guys to show how they fit, for those guys to show what they can do. What do you like about those three, Shane? I mean, what are your expectations for that trio the rest of the way, if you have any?
Well, first of all, I'm glad I spent 3 days writing about who the 5th starter will be, only to find out that the 5th starter is probably KU's best player or has an argument to be KU's best player.
Hey, at least you picked him. At least you didn't leave him out.
Yeah, right? 7 games in the season, that's pretty clear right now. And the starting rotation's set, basically. For me, I mean, I really like Harris's game in particular. And just the fact that the ball just never seems to stick with him. I mean, he's such a good passer. He's always looking to pass, which I think is the key part to him as well. You guys mentioned, though, and kind of alluded to it already, but having him and Marcus Garrett in the lineup at the same time is a little bit tougher sometimes, just because if teams are playing off both of them, and then maybe that makes it a little bit more difficult. But and so when Marcus Garrett is playing as many minutes as he has and gets in certain games, then maybe it's tough to fit Harris in there as much. But I mean, in particular of those three, he's the one that stands out to me because I really like his game.
Yeah, I think there's you keep hearing, Self said it this week, the potential is there for Inaruna and Grant Foster to be two of their better players come February. And physically, sure, it's absolutely there. Those guys are long, athletic. They can both shoot. I mean, they have a lot of game. But, we got to see that emerge before you know if it's even coming. And we've seen plenty of guys in those shoes that never came, right? They never figured it out in a certain season anyway. And it just was sort of untapped potential. But I think Harris is a guy that has the arrow trending up and is a guy that you can easily see, hey, he's going to have a role. He's going to – I mean, look, he was in there playing that zone against Tech for at least half of the time they played that zone down the stretch. And, I mean, it was him and Ochai up top or him and Garrett up top at times. And that's a pretty big moment for a, a redshirt freshman still figuring it all out. So there's obviously a lot to like about that. Benton, what'd you make of the zone? I wrote a whole separate sidebar on it. Really last night I wasn't tired and I just kept going and had that thing posted at 2 a.m. or something. And I love doing that because when games are fun and they give you a lot to break down, it's a lot of fun. And sometimes you just keep going. I think, was it the Kentucky game we talked about, Benton, where I was still writing at 4 a.m. or whatever?
Yeah. And that was, you were just writing for 72 straight hours. If
yeah.
I remember correctly.
Yeah. Right. So just Jägermeister and coffee nonstop. But anyway, I loved writing about it. I loved watching it. What'd you make of that zone? You wrote a little about the defense, especially with Jalen on that last play, which was out of man defense. But do you think this is a zone team? Could they be?
No, I don't think so. I think, Self hates zone defense.
Right.
And I think it worked out well because for the reasons that Self kind of outlined after the game, right? They kept giving up drives to Tech, and Tech kept getting to the free throw line or, getting layups. And when you played that zone, that kind of made it a lot more difficult for them to do that, especially a lot more difficult for them to get to the free throw line. And then you also can just have McCormick sitting back there in the paint instead of involved in ball screen defense, which, isn't his strength at all. So, it made sense why they did it. I also love, he said that they just basically installed this generic run-of-the-mill 2-3 defense a couple days ago. Seven minutes on it because they hated their other zone defense.
That's the best part. Doesn't it just make you wonder what that other zone defense was? Because he talked in the summer. He loved their length on the perimeter. He I think one time I was talking to him and he was even talking about matchup stuff and maybe some trapping in the half court out of zone and things like that. This has just been such a weird year to try to put anything in. So it immediately made me wonder, I wonder what that was. I wonder what they were trying to do. And obviously good that they scrapped it because it wasn't needed last night. And the good old Jim Boeheim 2-3 worked just fine.
The Jim Boeheim 2-3 is a little bit more active and complex than what KU was playing.
It is.
But yeah, it worked for that moment. So, great adjustment. And obviously another example of, Self being, I feel like the longer he's here, the more willing he is to kind of get creative and do things he doesn't necessarily like just to do it for a few minutes because it'll be for the benefit of the team. He's not going to be hard-headed and say, well, we only play man defense and just keep giving up free throws and layups, right?
And that's what it is, right? It's not this guy could draw up anything. He knows the game. He knows – you could give him something that an NBA team is doing brand new and he'd have it figured out in 2 days. It's not that he can't coach a style or can't coach anything. It's a philosophy. It's hard-headed, like you said. We're going to play man because I don't want my guys – relaxing and falling back on zone and being lazy because of it. And like you said, the Boeheim Syracuse zone is much more active. They don't allow that in that zone, but a lot of zones will do that. Guys will get lazy and a good zone offense can make a zone defense look absolutely pedestrian and just pathetic, which I was a little surprised Tech didn't have more of an answer. I mean, they played 8 minutes a zone, you know, and they just kept taking deeper and deeper three-pointers, one shot and out, nothing was going. And, yeah, I was surprised they didn't try to make some kind of adjustment. Maybe they did, but obviously it didn't work. So,
I think Billis was talking about this in the broadcast. With Tech basically playing like a motion offense as its primary offense, I think that also makes it a little bit more difficult. You probably don't have a ton of sets to running in zone. It's all kind of like philosophy and reacting.
Yeah, right. Like everybody that's played basketball at any level knows, though, the basics of how to beat a zone, right? I mean, you get the ball to the middle, you kick it out, you skip across. I mean, reversal, move, you know, I mean, there's a lot of short corner, things like that. So these guys, even though they do play motion and that's their primary offense, I mean, all those guys have played plenty of basketball where they should know, even like you said, just how to react to it and just beat it that way. But credit to KU. They played it well, and it obviously was the right move. So let's jump in and talk Big 12. It's just getting started. Obviously, West Virginia's coming to Allen Fieldhouse on Tuesday night for another just promised to be dogfight slugfest battle, and I can't wait for that because last night's was entertaining, and this one could be even better. But you go down to Texas Tech, the 14th ranked team in the country, and you win on the road for the 18th time in a Big 12 opener and the 30th in a row of Big 12 openers. I mean, that's a pretty good statement that KU is still going to be a tough out. I mean, I don't think anybody had Texas Tech winning the Big 12. Do you?
Not this year. No, right. I don't think so. I mean, Beard's done an obviously awesome job of just kind of retooling that program year after year. I mean, they have lost quality guys.
Absolutely. For
every single year that he's been there, and they come right back with, you know, they'll find transfers or, you know, do whatever they need to do. It's really a credit to him that they've remained so competitive considering the turnover they have in their roster.
Yeah. So it's clearly a contender. They'll be a factor. They're going to have some say in who wins the Big 12 because they're going to beat a bunch of people. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of look at this thing as a three team race, and maybe I'm dead wrong. But I never thought Tech was in there. I think they're going to be tough and they're going to factor, like I said, but I don't have them in there. And I don't, even though Texas is off to an amazing start, I got to see it before we give them that kind of treatment. Right. I mean, it's, they got a great roster. They got a great team. They look to be off to a great start. They've got a coach with hair. I mean, there's all kinds of things to just really not recognize about Texas. I mean, let's sidebar on that one. I don't know what to do with Shaka's hair. Does anybody?
No, I think Tate, I told you this on a phone conversation we had a while back. The first like Texas highlights I saw this year, I saw the entire highlight package. They showed Shaka Smart. I didn't think twice about it. I was like, I don't know who that guy is. But and then 2 days later, I was watching Texas play like a little bit live on TV. And I was like, wait, that was Shaka Smart? I had no idea. He's let the hair grow out. 2020 has got him avoiding the barbershop, and he's got a completely different look. It blew me away. I did not know it was him.
It's obviously working.
It's working, yeah. I mean, this is the best Texas team that he's had since he got there.
Yeah, do you think they're – I mean, do you guys think they're a contender? Or do you – obviously, since I singled them out, I'm looking at KU, Baylor, West Virginia. Those are my three, real hot take there. Nobody else is talking like that. My God. But I think a lot of people are talking about four or five teams that are in the mix, and I don't put Texas there yet. Shane?
Yeah, without seeing much of Texas, I don't know for sure. But, I mean, I still think – Texas and Texas Tech could be in the mix as well.
Yeah.
In this same spirit of bad preseason takes, I remember saying, hey, can you probably second or third in the Big 12 when we were talking about our predictions? And I forgot Bill Self is just amazing because last night was just Bill Self was amazing. And he goes to that zone, you know, the last play for the game winner to Ochai's him. I mean, you forget that KU is going to win, you know, three or four games like that, where it's just Bill Self is going to outsmart the other team and road or home. And I think part of my preseason assumption was, you know, home court doesn't matter. There's a, you know, top tier in the Big 12, and it's just going to be them battling it out, and then KU would fall to, you know, second or third. And so maybe after last night, I want to readjust, I guess, that thinking.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, it is easy to forget because you take it for granted because he's been so damn good. I mean, you know, they're 4-0 in games decided by 4 points or fewer this year, but that's just the scratching the surface over his career at Kansas. He's got a really good record in those types of, you know, 5 points or less games. And he's you know, he believes in himself, and his players believe in him as much as anything in those moments. So what's interesting, though, is how, let's say Jalen Wilson doesn't play defense as well as he did on that final possession. And let's say Texas Tech scores there and they walk out of there with a big time win over number 5 Kansas. The conversation today or in the 24 hours following that game would have been Kansas could finish 4th or 5th in the Big 12. They only scored 58 points. Oh my God, what's going on? Right? I mean, it's just amazing how one shot on each end, but you know, a matter of seconds completely changes the outlook for thousands of people. I mean, you know, it's just incredible. And I think what you've got to remember and what we've all probably learned over the years is that it's 18 freaking games, man. The Big 12 race is not decided in 1 week or 5 games or 2 games. I mean, it's, man, you got to show up start to finish and you got to be good. And there are a lot of teams in that mix that we talked about that are good. But it's going to be really interesting this year. We mentioned COVID a little bit ago, right? So it might not be an 18-game grind this year. It might be 14. And so I think that reality, 14 or 15, you know, everybody loses a few games because of quarantine or whatever it is. That reality, I think, makes a win like last night so much bigger because now it's maybe, you know, a much bigger percentage than it would be out of instead of 1/18, it's 1 out of 14 games, and you got a bunch of them coming up at home too. So I don't know. Baylor the team to beat, though, Benton, is that still fair? Do you feel like that's right? I mean, I feel like that's what most people think.
Yeah, I mean, their season's been weirder than most, right? Because they've had games postponed multiple times. They were supposed to play Gonzaga a week or so ago, and that was, you know, going to be one of the better games of the year, and that one had to get postponed like 2 hours before tip off or something like that. Just one of those crazy situations. So they haven't really played anybody. I think they played Illinois. That's probably their marquee game so far, if I'm remembering that correctly. And obviously they're undefeated, have only played 4 times, but just with the guys they brought back, I mean, they have to be the favorite. They were so good last year.
Yeah.
And I mean, that just minimal turnover in terms of their roster from that year. And I was looking forward to that Gonzaga Baylor game. Exactly. I was like going to DVR it because I think it was on a Saturday. So I was covering football or something. But I mean, that's one of those games you would actually love to see this year. Oh. It's a shame that that'd be one of the teams that I would actually watch, I think, is Gonzaga. Just in my spare time, willingly watch a college basketball game.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. That's what's interesting about West Virginia on Tuesday night. They're 6-1, KU's 7-1. I think West Virginia plays Friday night. So depending on when you listen to this, they might have a different record. But either way, up until the point we recorded this thing, their only loss was to Gonzaga, just like Kansas. And they lost by 5 points, and Kansas lost by double digits. And, you know, that doesn't really mean a whole lot, but – it definitely shows you that West Virginia can play, and it shows you that, again, Tuesday is going to be an absolute war. I mean, it's just – I hate saying that because I think people get upset when you use that term, but it's going to be an absolute just slugfest, physical, intense. You can't take a possession off. If you do, you'll pay for it. And I think the more opportunities KU has to stack up moments like they had against Texas Tech late – both ends, offense, they execute really twice and get the go-ahead bucket. And on defense, they lock down and execute there too. I mean, when that becomes your norm, when that becomes what you expect, it makes you that much tougher in those moments, you know, when they come up in the future. So
yeah, That was one of the things that, I mean, Tech killed KU on the offensive glass. Like, I mean, and West Virginia has bigger bodies. And I mean, that's like such a part of like Bob Huggins' team's personas.
Sure.
It's just destroying you on the offensive glass. I'm interested to see how KU handles that, because I mean, other than Jalen Wilson, I'm not sure that they have a lot of guys who can go toe to toe with West Virginia's front line and, you know, battle for the glass and come out, you know, with rebounds.
That's how they score, right?
I mean,
that's mm-hmm. like their best offense is, who cares if you miss the shot, Oscar or Culver's going to go get it. And oftentimes they get it back up on the glass. And a lot of times those are 3-point plays. They're fouled, that kind of, I mean, that, they don't care. They're not trying to win style points. They're trying to win a basketball game. And yeah, that'll be a lot for KU to handle. The interest, and that's where the zone comes back into play. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they use it at all, because it's definitely harder to rebound out of a zone. But I went back and rewatched it last night, at least that 8 minutes of the second half, and I just wanted to chart it all and make sure I had everything right. But they gave up zero offensive rebounds out of the zone. I mean, that's pretty remarkable for a team that's not that big and was getting beat on the boards anyway, and then you throw a zone into the mix. That was a hell of an effort by all those guys. And I thought Christian Brown was terrific on the glass. I mean, in that stretch especially, he was really good. Marcus Garrett was really good. I mean, Brown and Wilson, bad nights offensively. But, man, if you're a KU fan, what you love to see about this team is that those two guys who are important, starters, key players, they laid an egg most of the offensive evening. And then when the game's on the line, they both made a play to win. I mean, that is why, if you're a Kansas fan, you get excited about this team, and why you think, or why you should think, that their potential is really high, because that's not easy to do. I mean, especially for young guys, that is not easy to do, to stay plugged in like that and still go make a play. So big time win, big time effort, a good primer for what's to come in Big 12 play. And yeah, I mean, they play Tuesday against West Virginia, and then obviously are off for a little while for the holidays and stuff, but they get right back into it January 2nd against Texas in Lawrence. I mean, let's lock that one up too. That'll be another battle. So lots of good days ahead, lots of good basketball ahead. It's just getting started. Benton, let's finish off with a little bit of football conversation. We promised the people we would. We can't just, I mean, as much as you might want to, Shane, you might want to also, we can't just end it and not talk about football. So let's talk about Sam Burt coming back. No, that's great, though. Good for him. I like the way he announced that. That's really cool. And it'll be fun to see if more seniors kind of say, hey, I'm coming back. But you know, Sam Burt made his announcement not about him at all. It was about, I want to come back and help do my part to build this culture. So that's what they need, and I feel like that's what they think they got with this recruiting class. It seems like, you know, of course every program in the country likes their class, but it seems like they feel like that the group that they sign will actually, in addition to being talent that they can play and use, it'll actually be guys that can help kind of move that culture in the direction it needs to be too. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I think so. And I think they kind of really love what they have in some of their top guys. And obviously Devin Neal is the guy we know a lot about, him being just a stud running back from Lawrence High, but also just like a high character guy, right? I mean, Les Miles said he expects Devin Neal to come in and be willing to be a leader right off the bat. And I think that they like that these players they signed, a lot of the more highly rated 3-star guys that they got are kind of in that mold from a character standpoint. I think they feel the same way about Ben Easters, the quarterback, and OJ Burrows, one of the defensive backs that they signed. I think that's, and if they're right about that, then that's a great way to keep building this. I don't, you know, I feel like recruiting classes are always so impossible to like have a feel for on signing day, or, I mean, because you truly don't know what type of player each guy is until maybe two years into his playing career, right? Absolutely. I mean, some guys like Caron Prunty come in and they're just, you know, studs from day one, but it's usually not the case. You usually have to work your way into the rotation, and it's it's just like you have to wait to know, is this a good class or not? But I thought that we're only, you know, a year removed from the 2020 signing class, and it seems like a pretty solid class. They had to play a lot of those guys out of necessity, but a lot of those guys made the best of that opportunity. And I mean, the plan is to, it seems, to keep doing that, you know, bring in young players that they really like and keep building this. And you got to give them credit for that, because I mean, how many years did we talk about that when previous coaches were here? Like, well, they keep bringing in all these JUCO guys and that's not going to work. No. He's not doing that anymore.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. And I think that, I don't know, man, you know, you write these stories when these guys commit or when they sign, and I mean, I'll be completely honest, especially after this season, the way it unfolded, 0-9, rough games up and down the board. Every time a kid commits to Kansas or signs, I'm just kind of like, wow, what is he – why is he coming here? Like, you know, what –
he wants to play.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably mostly that, right? But I think there has to be more. I mean, like –
yeah, I think they like the coaches. I think the coaches do a good job of connecting with the players and their families.
Right.
You know, Les is great at that. Brent Dierman is great at that. Emmett Jones is great at that. They've got guys that really do a good job on the recruiting front, and that probably allows them to bring in better players than they should be getting. I mean, they might all be three-star guys, but I mean,
that's who you gotta get.
Yeah, that's your pool. So if you're getting the best you can get out of that pool, you're doing your job.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think that's why I said that, because I think that I think these guys deserve credit for being able to talk kids into coming to Kansas. I mean, it's like, it's no guarantee, you know, like there's no guarantee you're going to get any talent here, because yeah, the playing time's available, but who wants to play and lose 60-10 every game? I mean, that's what this decade has been about. And so for these guys to convince these kids, not JUCO guys, not grown men, you know, kids, for them to convince them that, like, hey, come do this with us. It's going to be good for you. It's going to be good for the program, and you're going to love it. And the fans are going to love you. I mean, like, that is no easy sell. And I know each year, no matter how good or bad they are, they're going to end up with 25 new faces, because you got to sign somebody, and they're going to find guys, you know, and they've had to move on from big time talents that they wanted to get. And, you know, you just move on. I mean, like Amani Bledsoe, right? That was a big time Lawrence High kid, ended up at Oklahoma. It was down to OU and KU. They had a real shot at him, and he picks Oklahoma at the end of the day. Well, they moved on. And you know who they signed instead? Isaiah Bean. Right. I mean, Isaiah Bean, talented in his own right, didn't do much here. So that's part of it. You know, you have to sign guys. But I do think that this group is really showing that they're connecting with the guys they are signing, and this group of coaches, that is. And I think that means something. I think that's – they deserve credit for that, because it is not at all an easy sell. Shane, what jumps out at you about this class? I know a lot of people were freaking out about not enough O-linemen. I think they probably – most fans wanted 20 offensive linemen because of how bad the offensive line was. But there are a few, and I don't know that any of them will start or play right away, but –
You don't want that, though. You don't
right.
want a true freshman right. starting on the offensive
right.
line.
Right. Great point. Yeah. So, I mean, I think the guys they got are good. I mean, I think they like them anyway, and they fit. But anyway, Shane, what jumped out at you about the class?
Yeah, out of the offensive line, I think Robinson's pretty good. I mean, he in particular is the one who stood out to me when just kind of glancing through their highlight films, which obviously don't show much. But, I mean, you could see, like, actual real potential there. And as Benton just mentioned, I mean, you don't want them playing right away. So that the solution to fixing the offensive line isn't, hey, let's put 18, 19-year-old kids on there and tell them to block defense linemen. It's hoping that, hey, your previous recruiting classes will be developed more coming into next year. And maybe there's a transfer that can help, you know, add to it as well going into next year. But that's the solution to fix the offensive line, not, hey, these high school kids coming in right away should play next year and fix it. So – but I did want to say that Robinson was the one that stood out to me out of the offensive lineman.
Yeah, Benton, people want to know, man, the departures in the portal. reason to panic. I mean, I think if you're KU, you can spin it a certain way that doesn't sound like that, but you're not KU. So what do you tell fans? I mean, should they panic about that right now?
I feel like the only guy who has left that was surprising to me was Stephon Robinson.
Yeah, right.
I thought just because, you know, he's a guy who got hurt. It was kind of circumstances that kept him from playing this year. I mean, he barely played because he was dealing with injuries early on and then had surgery. And he's, I thought he would come back. So that was surprising to me, but none of the other guys who left, I mean, Andrew Parchman had no interest in playing here again. I mean, if you watched the games and saw how little they were able to involve him.
Yeah.
Why? I mean, this guy's trying to go to the NFL. Why would he come back for more of this?
He also didn't have a good year, and it wasn't just his fault.
Right.
But it's not like a devastating loss, right? I mean, like, you didn't lose a guy who just caught 100 balls or something crazy like that. I mean, like, he's talented. I'm not knocking him at all, but.
Yeah, to me, that's – I mean, I never thought Parchman was coming back, so that, to me, right. I don't – I'm like
okay, – Wait, do you think Puka's coming back? Sorry.
Didn't we talk on the podcast after he opted out that he would enter the draft?
That was the clearest thing ever, and we made it clear minute one, and people were still surprised when he didn't. So, anyway, I didn't cut you off there.
No, that's okay. I mean, Kyle Mayberry has been here forever. I don't blame him for wanting to try to find somewhere where he can maybe play on a winning team in his last year of college football. And I think that's what's going on with Stephon Robinson too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I don't think he has anything against KU. I think he just wants to, you know, experience something different before his football days are over.
I think that's where
And he also has – he also probably still thinks he has a chance to make it as a pro.
Sure.
So you want to be able to go somewhere where you can really maximize that opportunity to showcase your skills. So to me, the moment that I would start panicking if I was a KU football fan is you know, when guys that are not seniors are entering the transfer portal.
Right.
That hasn't happened. It could happen. I mean, the players, it's up to them whether they want to stick around here or not. I think your foundational guys you're confident in, but if you have other guys who end up leaving the program, that's going to hurt your scholarship numbers. That's going to hurt what you're able to put on the field. So that's when I would start panicking if I was a fan. If younger players who were not seniors in 2020 start, you know, heading to the portal the way that these seniors have.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think the panic line for me anyway is also, it's important to take into account what you just said a minute ago about how these guys that are all leaving, they've got nothing but good things to say about KU. I mean, they are just literally looking for that opportunity that KU hasn't been able to give them and won't probably be able to give them, right? And with 1 year left. So, but they're not like, I had to get the hell out of there, or I hate those coaches, or that place sucks. Or, I mean, and maybe they wouldn't do it publicly. Some kids would, though. I mean, it's just, I think that the amicable way it's all ending for all of these guys, it seems anyway, that adds something to where it's probably a reason not to panic. You know, this is just kids looking for opportunity that they don't have here. And frankly, I don't think that's a bad thing for KU at all, because these guys that are all leaving are, what is it, 3-18 over the last 2 years? I mean, it's, you know, not all on them by any means, but it's not like they were lighting the world on fire either. So why not replace them with some new bodies and new faces and see if maybe that can help you jumpstart this program? So, you know, some of those guys you mentioned are talented dudes, but not talented enough to avoid 3-9 and 0-9, you know, so let them go find their road and let some new faces, new blood come in here and see if it can't help. And some of that showed up early this year, right? Some of that showed up in those freshmen like Prunty, which doesn't Les call him Prutney every time?
You never know how he's going to pronounce it.
Oh, he's done it right?
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like I only hear him say Prutney, and it makes me question myself, because I'm like, have I been pronouncing this thing wrong? It's terrible. Shane, any other thoughts on the class before we wrap this thing up? I mean, did anybody else jump out at you? Have you looked at Easters much? I know Benton's got a story coming up this weekend on Ben Easters, the quarterback that they did sign, and you know, I think you got to get one in every class. So there he is, and he's got some talent. But have you looked at him much, Shane?
I have not, but I'm looking forward to reading Ben's story about Easters.
There you go. Okay, what can you tell us about him?
Cloud my judgment.
Real quick, what can you tell us about him, Benton, before – not to give away your story, but, I mean, you asked Les about this on signing day, do you think this is a guy that can come in and push right away, or is he 2-3 years down the road maybe the guy?
I think that they're open to him coming in and becoming the guy. I think that, you know, Les had a very diplomatic answer about it, you know, like
– Yeah, he did.
We'll come in and he'll come in and we'll watch him, and if he – you know, kind of presents himself as a guy capable of starting, then we'll consider that. And, you know, if he doesn't, we're fine with developing him. And right. That's absolutely what you should be doing when you're in KU's shoes right now. You don't have a 100% lock for your quarterback position heading into next year. So if someone new comes in and outplays the guy you would assume would be that guy, Jalen Daniels, if Ben Easters is just better than Jalen Daniels in spring practices and in August, you go with Ben Easters. Right. And if he's not, that's okay too. You let him learn the system and develop and, you know, bring him along. So I think they're open-minded to it. They definitely didn't say, I mean, Les generally does not like to kind of give any clues about, you know, what their plans are, especially with the quarterback. But the sense I got is that Ben Easters will have a shot to come in and win this job if he plays to that level.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's all you can ask for. And look, I mean, with the portal guys too, I think that I asked Les if he'd be open to looking at the portal to build their roster. And I think, I mean, he said, yeah, it'd have to be the right fit. It didn't sound like he was crazy about it or was going to do a whole bunch of portal mining, so to speak. But I think if you can find guys that are eligible for 1 year to replace the guys that you could have brought back that are now leaving, with this season being a free year and no scholarship limit for at least one season, I mean, God, do that. Take all the guys you can get. Bring them in. Have them help. And if they play, they play. And if they don't, they can help in other ways and with their experience and in practice and just being part of that culture change. So I think that's another thing to look at with that transfer portal. I don't think it's just exit only, you know. I think there's a chance that they could bring some guys in and I think that'd be a decent move. And I don't think anybody would need to second guess it. I don't think anybody would need to say, oh, here they go again, bunch of transfers, because it's totally different than those JUCO experiences and this is a COVID thing and could be just a 1 year thing to replace a bunch of guys who would have only been here one more year anyway. So if that happens, I don't think that's reason for people to fly off the handle about, oh, here, yeah, he didn't do that very long. I mean, no, Les is doing it right. This whole staff's doing it right. They're stacking high school kids on top of high school kids and just got to be patient, which is really hard to do, but that's why we all own rakes and why trees have leaves, right, Shane?
Exactly. And along your lines on the portal, there are like over 1,000 names in the portal, so not all of them are going to find a place. So maybe KU gets someone that they probably wouldn't have been in the market for if someone's just looking for a place to play.
Sure. Yeah, that's going to get really interesting, just having spots for guys eventually. I want to end it with a Devin Neal story because you talked about his character and Les talked a ton about his character. Well, at Lawrence High's last game of the year against Derby this year, Shane was obviously covering it. I went out to write a column. I thought it'd be a fun game, big time playoff atmosphere. It was not a fun game. It was not in any way memorable for Lawrence High, probably, or for Devin Neal, even though he had good numbers. But we're standing around out there on the field afterwards. They're hugging. The guys are crying. Their season just ended. Some of them will never play football again. And I saw Devin and I asked him, hey, you got a quick second? And he said, I'd really rather hang with my team right now, if that's okay. And I said, yeah, that's fine. Cause I ended up not finding much to write about anyway. So I was just fishing for something. Well, I wrote about what I watched. I wrote about the scene and, you know, it's a Lawrence thing and a Lawrence High and a city thing and all that. And the next day, Devin Neal sent me a note that said, hey, Mr. Tate. And he called me Mr. Tate cause he's that kind of kid.
And you're old.
And I'm old, right? Also, I forget that. hey, Mr. Tate, I really want to thank you for respecting my wishes last night. You know, I just went on and on about how much he appreciated that opportunity for him to just live that moment as a high school kid one more time with his team. And that's the kind of kid he is. I mean, he's mature. He gets it. He sees the big picture, and he's crazy talented. I mean, that running back position is so solid. Even losing Khalil Herbert and the 30,000 yards he rushed for this year, even losing Puka Magic, I mean, they're still in such good shape at the running back position with Hyshaw and the one I can't pronounce, Hesek.
Amari Pesek Hickson.
No, I did a Keegan. Switched the first letter. That sucked. But then Neil as well, you know, he's got a chance to factor in right away. So if that's who they recruited and more guys like that, which it sounds like that's what they were looking for, then there's a chance for that to work. And they still got to play, and they still got to be better than a bunch of guys in the Big 12. And it's a long uphill road, but there's a lot to like there, I think. So I just – that story will stick with me a long time. That was cool of him. He didn't have to do it by any means. I was fine with not talking to him and letting him be, but he went that extra mile. So it'll be really interesting. But for now, we're going to move on from football for a little while. Benton won't, but at least he won't be – stuck covering football when Gonzaga and Baylor are playing. And he'll be able to cover a lot of basketball with me and Shane the rest of the way. So this might be it before the holidays. I don't know if we'll get to one next week. We'll try, but it is Christmas next Friday. So in case we don't get to one, and in case we don't talk to you guys before then, happy holidays. Be well, be safe, be happy, be merry. And check out all our coverage at KUSports.com of some big-time KU games coming up real soon, as well as more stuff from Benton, including that highly anticipated Ben Easters feature that Shane cannot wait to read.
I have to rewrite this thing now.
Fair enough. That's all we got. For Shane Jackson and Benton Smith, I'm Matt Tate. Thanks for checking out the KU Sports Hour here at KUSports.com. Happy holidays, and take care of yourselves, everyone.